a big, beefy, bouncing, casting bunny. First of all, excuse the voice, I've had a cold, and it's all fine now, but my voice has gone down several stops. Everybody had a cold, and I was going around saying, well, you know, I'm the tough, strong bunny, I won't get colds. I never get colds. And then, of course, I did, but it was very quick. Treated it mostly with whiskey, so it's all right now. Well, just a minute, let's get back, let's get comfy. This is most uncomfy. Take the guard up, that's it. Now, I hope you can still hear. I'll taste it later and see. I hope so. Well, first of all, I think thank you very much, all of you, all you lot. Dad and Maze and me, Kenneth. I don't suppose John's there, and send John a special letter. But thank you very, very much for all the letters you've written. It's absolutely incredible. Every week on the dot, I get a letter from either Dad or Maze. And it's super. I really love it. Only other person who's been as regular and faithful as that is good old Kathleen, who's written every single week since I went away. She hasn't missed a week. And that's absolutely fantastic, because she's so busy, I don't know how she manages. Anyway, I really love them. I think the news is great. I love Maisie's lavatorial ones, the ruder the better. And all Dad's ones. Dad's a sort of... I can picture the scene as he describes you sitting in the study waiting for Coker's, and describes the new living room with all its materialistic setup. It's really, I love getting it, so thank you very much. I'm just sorry that I'm not as regular as you are at writing. Well, I think the first thing I want to say now is how very happy I am here. I think you probably can guess from the letters I write, the sort of mood that I'm in. And certainly, at the beginning, let's say at this time last year, I was pretty miserable, I really was. Everything was strange, I was really homesick, and I had a space in my diary where I just crossed off the days till it was time to come home, and it seemed endless and endless. Even although I was enjoying the work, and although I loved the Chooks, it still was just very difficult. But now, you have no idea, every day I'm so happy. I wake up thinking that it's great to be here and that I've got a great job to do. And although I want to come home, and although I miss home, I'm just enjoying working here. It's just a super experience. I can't explain it, I can't describe it, but I'll try and describe some of the reasons and some of the bits of it. But I'm going to stop now and have a wee test, because this needle's hardly flickering.
In Vietnamese. Must admit it.
Seems to be going all right. So I'll carry on. I think one reason that has made a tremendous difference to all of us in our happiness is the house that we've got. It's a crazy house, it really is. I mean, nobody's got a house like this in Saigon at all. We found it by accident, Joss and I, when we were coming to visit a friend, Heinz Cotter, and we just saw the notice. And it's a little house, tiny wee house, with a garden that Joss keeps watered very carefully, and it's got a papaya tree, and it's got some trees with fruit, and then just plants around the edge. Very small garden, with a courtyard where we can sit and have our breakfast in the mornings. And then it's got a front room that started off being our eating room, and it's really a sitting room, but it's also now become our office. And well, I'll be talking about that later, but the office has just expanded out of all recognition. So it's lined with shelves, and it's got typewriters and a place for the secretary to work, and all kinds of official places and notice boards. And we eat our meals there, and if official sort of visitors come, then we entertain them there, give them a cup of tea and talk business with them. But we don't really sit there terribly often. And then there's a hot shower and a bathroom, and behind that is Chris's room, which is quite big, and he's got it all fitted up with radio antennae, and we can listen to the BBC really quite clearly at night. Last year I listened to the rugby match, but this year it'll be even clearer, it'll be great. And then that bit of the house is kind of separate, and you have to cross another bit of the courtyard to a kind of back place, and we store a lot of junk under the stairs, just like anybody else. And then you come to Ellen's room, which is a little room that's self-contained. She's made it into a sort of bed-sitting room, because Ellen's really quite individualistic. She likes to live on her own, sort of separate. And you can go through her room to a bathroom, a very clean, nice, tidy bathroom, which is Ellen's and mine, we share it. And then there's another door from the bathroom into the kitchen, which you can also get at from the courtyard. The cooking's done outside in the courtyard on a sort of stove with two burners. And the kitchen just has a sink and all the storage space for the food, and a tank that keeps overflowing regularly if we turn the taps the wrong way. All over the place, you get a kind of waterfall that you've got to rush underneath. And then we have a staircase that goes up onto the roof. And this is really the best bit of the house. It's absolutely super. It was literally just the roof of the house, and it still has a kind of balustrade round it. And the landlord has just built a kind of lean-to tin roof along the top out of wood, which, well, it can fall down as easily as anything. It's just held up by sort of faith, hope, and a few bits of wires. And to keep the rain out and to keep it cool, we have wooden shutters, right, sort of roller blinds right down the two sides. But if you roll all the blinds up, somebody says it's like being on the bridge of a ship. We can see in two directions, right over the whole of Saigon. And that's my bedroom and Joss's. We share it, and we have a couple of big beds. And then we've got nice bright covers on them, and a suite of a couch, a couple of chairs with nice bright covers of folk weave stuff on them. And then we built ourselves wooden brick bookcases right round two sides of the walls, full of books, and we have the tape recorder there. We've got plants growing in baskets, and we've got a hammock slung up. We've got a wardrobe full of mosquitoes and clothes, which we share. And we hang all kinds of things up. We've got bouncy toys, and we've got big balloons, and a set of wind chimes, you know, Chinese bells that ring when the wind blows. We've got batik on the walls. We've got a picture of Stanley, the secretary. We've got flowers, bits of pottery that we keep collecting from the pottery village. A bottle of whiskey stashed in the corner. Mosquito repellent. And then a couple of desks, one Joss's and one mine, where we both work and have all our business stacked up. Filing cabinet. It's really a great big crowded room, and then a table in the middle stacked with newspapers, with Guardians a week old, Newsweeks, Punch, and it's just a great room, and it's the room that we all live in. In the evening after we've had our meal, we have the coffee percolator going upstairs, and we all just come upstairs, we sit round chatting, talking, we play lyre dice, and chess. We have some fantastic chess competitions that go on. We have all kinds of things, card games, and we just enjoy living in the room very much indeed. It's really a great place. The one drawback of it is really that if one or other of us is tired and wants to go to bed, the whole of the team is there, and they're all happy, and you've got to kick them all out. One thing we really like about it, about this house, is that people find it so friendly that they come to call and they come and stay. We almost always have visitors. We can hardly remember a time when we haven't had people staying. And they all say that it's just because it's such a friendly, relaxed house that they like to come. Which has its disadvantages. We sometimes feel that we never want to see another visitor again. But on the other hand, it's very much, I think, something that one would want, and it's certainly the way Quakers feel about things, and it's, I think, the way just Christians generally ought to be. I know when I come home, something that I very much want is to have a house that can just be open to anybody to come at any time, drop in. I think that's something terribly important, and I certainly enjoy it here. Then, of course, that's not all. We have the house across the road, which is shared between our lot and Oxfam. And to begin with, that's where Peter lives. He has the top floor, and he has a room of his own there, where he sleeps, and he's got his writing desk and everything. And downstairs is where Andrew lives, in the front room. He has a kind of sitting room, which is where I go for Vietnamese lessons. And occasionally he has us over for coffee there, but he prefers our house, so he usually comes over to us at night. And now there's another Oxfam man, an elderly chap, about 50, maybe. I don't know what age he is. He's very bald. He's quite nice. He's sort of worked as a district commissioner in East Africa, so he's rather sort of establishment. But he's called Tim, and he lives in the back part of the house. And then they have a super roof on top, which you can get to by a ladder, and it has the most fantastic view over the whole of Saigon. And when we had the fire at the end of the street, Chris went up on the roof and took really sensational photographs from the roof. And recently I've been doing sort of meditation sessions, and I go up onto the roof because it's kind of accepted that if you go onto the roof, you let somebody know that you're going to the roof, and that means you want peace and quiet and a bit of time to yourself, which is a great idea. Excuse me, I'm going to have to stop and have a sneeze. That's it. Decided to blow my nose at the same time. So that's all finished now. I think another reason for being happy... Oh, well, I'll come back to that. We have Quaker meetings in our house every Sunday, in the nice bedroom upstairs. And I'll talk about that later. I hope you can hear all the background noises that are going on. The house is bordered on two sides by narrow alleyways. We have a back door into a really narrow lane that leads to a whole network of lanes. And men and women go up and down these streets selling things in baskets on their shoulders. And that's the shouts that you can hear. That's a very long one. She's selling a kind of Chinese soup that you eat with hot chili sauce and noodles. It's rather good. But there's everything in the back lane. It's fantastic. Well, now, I think the next thing really is another reason for being so happy is the companionship we have in the team. Ellen, I think, is probably the one I've come closest to, although she's the least part of the team of anybody. And because of this, I think, has a very difficult time. She likes being her own. Her ideas are not in keeping altogether with Quaker ideas. She has a sort of sneaking spot that rather likes luxury, which I quite sympathise with. And Ellen and I get on very well indeed. She's less and less involved now in the work of the team, becoming more and more taken up with the adoption of her wee daughter, Marion, who's just, oh, she's sweet. She's really a nice wee chook. I think Ellen will have problems with her. She's very withdrawn, Marion. She doesn't really respond very affectionately yet, but I think she will. And oh, we all just love her very dearly. Ellen is going home in March. Probably going to go via California because of the adoption. She wants to settle in England ultimately, but she thinks she'll have to spend at least some months, maybe a couple of years in California to be able to take out American citizenship for her daughter and then get to Britain and take out British nationality. It's all a bit complicated. I just hope it works. Peter is the one I find most difficult to get on with. He's totally dedicated to the idea of Quakerism. All his conversation is about Quaker friends in New Zealand, Australia or England. But it's not, I don't think it's a religious conviction with Peter. I think it's more like a kind of social club. And he depends very, very much on his contacts, on what other people think of him, and how he makes his relationships with other people. He finds it difficult to relate to people. He depends very much on, well, he did depend on Ellen, and they used to have fearful fights. He's now got a girlfriend, Julie, in Quang Nai, but I think that's rather a stormy relationship too, and I think he finds it difficult. He's a bit immature and a bit difficult sometimes to get on with, but a really great member of the team, and we're all very fond of him. He goes home probably in March too, and he thinks he's going to go to America to the Quaker College at Pendle Hill and study there for a while, and then possibly have a job in Wellington when he goes back to New Zealand. Joss and I share a room. Joss is big, good-natured, oh, really nice girl. She's got a very warm heart. She gets great big ideas, and she rushes off at tangents. I think perhaps the way I used to do not so terribly long ago, and I probably still do, but, well, she's that bit younger than I am, and she gets great bees in her bonnet about things. She'll come home really steamed up about some particular political injustice that she's unearthed, and she won't rest until she's nosed around and ferreted about and really kind of gets steamed up about it. She's great fun. The two of us have really lavatorial jokes and crude laughs every now and then. And she's real Australian in many ways. And a great enthusiast. I'm very fond of Joss. Then there's Chris, who's the youngest of the team. Very German in many ways. He's very thorough, very efficient, and a fiercely hard worker. He loves vans. The sun rises and sets on the engine of the Volkswagen, and he keeps taking the pieces out and sort of polishing them and rubbing them on his sweater and putting them back in again. He works in Govap, the biggest orphanage, and he's really, oh, he's got his, what we call Chris's whiz kids, who are a real crack bunch of kids. And Chris really likes these kids and works very well with them. He'll be going home probably in May, and he's hoping to go home by the Trans-Siberian Railway, so he's quite enthusiastic about that. He has to go back to university to study, because he had to break his studies. He refused to do national service. He's a conscientious objector. And he had to go to a trial, and then he managed to get in with Vietnam, so that he came here as alternative military service. Very mature person, he thinks a lot. We like Chris a lot. He's very sensible, and he's added a lot of depth to a lot of our thinking and a lot of discussions. As a team, we function terribly well together. It takes a fantastic amount of hard work. We meet every Saturday morning. We have a business meeting, which takes almost the whole morning. Each of us says what we've been doing throughout the week, who we've met, what kind of letters we've had, how the orphanages are progressing, who we've decided to discuss with. And then I write minutes of it all, which are typed up and read out the following Saturday. It's really the only way we can function. And sometimes we have quite difficult meetings. We disagree, and we can't do anything until we're unanimous, because that's Quaker principles. But it really has made us into a very, very strong functioning team. And very happy. We're very united. And although in our work we're raising lots of questions about where to go next, we're all quite clear about sort of basic ideas. And it made me very contented, very glad to be working with such a good team. Now, big important thing for coming to Andrew, the person that I haven't talked about yet. I'm really pretty crazy about Andrew. But, oh, he's one of these really sort of dedicated types. He's very keen on his work. And I don't know whether he's keen on me. Ellen thinks that he is. The neighbour, my Tom, across the road, who's very friendly with me, she thinks he is. She says she noticed it. And he'll stay till 2-3 in the morning discussing things and talking. He'll kiss me, sometimes. But then he'll kiss Joss as well, he'll kiss everybody. He's a great team man, he's one of the team. And, well, it's like the family came too, you know, the team came too. It's very difficult to be on my own with him. I sometimes have, and I've enjoyed it very much. We talk about basic things. He talks about what we're going to do when we go back home. He doesn't know very clearly, and neither do I have any very clear ideas. I just don't know. I feel perhaps he may not want to have a close relationship with me while he's working as part of the team, because it might make it difficult. And I feel rather the same way. But I do feel that if he hasn't said anything before I go home, then I'm going to, and just see what happens. But he's really quite the nicest chap I've ever met. You've seen his picture, doesn't quite do him justice. He's not good looking, really, and yet he is, terribly. He's got hardly any hair on top, which we keep teasing him about. And, he's just full of enthusiasm. He's, full of notions and ideas, and he'll talk the hind leg off a donkey. But then so will I, so neither of us listens to the other one. And he's just, well, when he's around, he's just strong. I'm just confident in him. And, you'll need to meet him. But I don't know. I just don't know if anything will come of it. Maybe not. It just may not be the kind of he's ever be. Well, Joss says he's the kind of chap who's the eternal bachelor and never get anywhere with him. I don't know. Joss is quite keen on him too, I think. So every now and then I get jealous as anything, but well, we just hit it off very well indeed, Andrew and I. I'll keep you informed. Because he's a great chap. He's away at the moment, he's away for 3 weeks. And then he'll be back and I'll be back at Tet, and we'll both be on our own in the house actually. And the others are all going away different places at Tet. So I'll be alone here. So will Andrew, so maybe that's our chance. I don't know. But he'll probably find some other Oxfam work to rush off and do. Stop him for another wee rest. Okay, it's me back again. I've discovered that the last lot was pretty faint. I'll try and speak up a wee bit. Hang on, I'm going to get my bit of paper. You see, I've written down all the things that I want to mention to you. Well, you may wonder if I ever do any work in all this sort of fun and jollification. It's amazing. I've just been thinking back today about how much the work's changed. You know, it was a year ago yesterday that we resigned. And since then, the work has... there's just no comparison, the way we've expanded. And really, everything that's happening just now is very, very interesting and exciting. For a start, we've got this great big office now. I mean, it's not big in size, but a tremendous output of work. I spend, I would think, probably not quite half of my time simply typing reports that have to be sent to London, to Australia, and writing to the Australian Parliament. Wait for this one, and writing to them, giving them advice on the Australian government's aid programme to Vietnam. I mean, it's crazy. And writing to, well, now we've got people in Canada, Germany and America all supporting us. And of course New Zealand. So that takes a lot of time. And then recently we've been having fascinating meetings with Vietnamese people. and I've been having to minute all of them. We're working in with a tremendous network of agencies all over Vietnam. The Buddhist Youth for Social Service, Asian Christian Service, Vietnam Christian Service. Just lots and lots of different organizations are now. And the great thing is we're not having to trail off and look for them. They're coming to us and sort of saying, you know, let's work together, what we can help each other in this, which is great, although I still do a lot of visiting. So that about the other half of my time is spent going out and visiting people, going to heads of organizations, going to daycare centers, particularly daycare centers, and interviewing people who run them, discussing problems with them. And I also go, well, only once a week now, I go to a playgroup. But if anybody's ill or if they're away on holiday, then I fill in and go to their playgroups. I miss the playgroups. Every time I go, I feel that it's been a terribly long time since I was last there. But, well, I suppose it was last February when we started thinking about things seriously, we realized that we're not the people to work with the children. It's the Vietnamese people who do that. That the only role that foreigners really can play here is a kind of administrative one. And so we've gone over more and more to administration. Peter, of course, is still on toy design and toy production. Joss is investigating a training scheme. We're going to set up a scheme to train playgroup leaders. And we hope to get older children from the orphanages to come to the training, to be sort of playgroup assistants. And Joss is trying to find Vietnamese staff who will run a training scheme. She's not doing it herself, but she's just going to get it organized. And at the same time, we're wanting to try and get a kind of person, a Vietnamese social worker, who will travel around the country to the orphanages, suggesting to them that they need playgroups. You see, we can't do it. When a Westerner walks in, they think that we're Americans with lots of cash coming to hand out the goodies. And when they find that we haven't got lots of cash and are not handing out the goodies, but that we think play therapy is good for their kids, they're not really half so interested. So Vietnamese people can do this far better. So that Ellen's replacement will be a playgroup supervisor, a Vietnamese person, and we'll also get social workers in the various other social agencies. So that really it's growing fantastically. We've got 15 teachers now, and we have staff trainings once a week on a Wednesday morning. And we're quite a squash getting them all into the room. And now we've got the person in charge of the YWCA sends 15 of her people to be trained by us as well, once a week. And we're sending our people out to the International Rescue Committee, who are helping to train our people, and are also sending some of their people to us. So it's quite a network. Oh, and UNICEF are working with us as well, and the Red Cross. So just in a year, things have kind of, well, Joss says, you know, they're getting out of control. We have to get up at 7 in the morning and just sort of straight into sheer office work. But I still love it. I love getting out and meeting people. I like discussing the problems. And recently, when Mildred Neville came from CIIR to stay, we met some really fascinating people. And we had discussions at our house with top people who are, well, not the top people, because the top people are not the ones who get things done. The ministers and people haven't a clue. It's the sort of second level that you want, the ones who are actually involved in the work and have influence. And we've been having really interesting discussions with them. We're questioning the whole role of volunteers and foreign help at all, because foreign aid in Vietnam is just so abused. The Americans pour millions of dollars in, and it's just not being used right. It totally weakens the Vietnamese agencies. makes Vietnamese people dependent on foreign aid, and that's precisely the opposite of what these people are wanting. They want the Vietnamese people to develop their own social awareness and deal with their own problems. And there's very little that foreigners can do to help this. But we've been going to some very interesting meetings, and we're moving away from the foreign agencies altogether and getting really deeply involved with the Vietnamese agencies. The thing is, the Vietnamese Council of Voluntary Agencies is not able to work. They're not able to meet because they're illegal. Any social organization that is Vietnamese might suggest reform or criticize the existing system, and so it's illegal. So you have to go and meet each of them individually, or else have little meetings in our house which won't be noticed. And I'm meeting some really, really aware people, and I feel very small and very insignificant compared with them. They're really doing the job. And I'm getting tremendous cooperation, and they're really helping us very much, because we are in the position of asking away from them, asking what we should do next and how we can best help and how we can phase ourselves out eventually. And I think they respect us for it. They're certainly helping, and they come to our house and ask us to have meetings, and we're really enjoying meeting all these people. It means that many of the meetings are having to be conducted in Vietnamese or in French, so that I'm back to learning Vietnamese again, and I'm sharing Andrew's tutor. And I have, well, at the moment Andrew's away, so I have the tutor all the time, and I have one Vietnamese lesson every day. And she's an excellent tutor, so that I'm beginning to have quite a breakthrough. And I can understand a lot of what goes on now at these meetings, and can make myself understood. The other great thing over the last few months is the tremendous cooperation we're getting from the committees. I think probably when you met Myrtle, you would realize this. I think we've got over the Celia and Gordon problem, and the committee is really working hard with us, and we appreciate that too. We feel we've sort of got them licked. They do almost anything we ask now, but they're really helping. So that's a tremendous help as well. I think the tape probably is going to run out quite soon. Maybe. In the actual playgroups, the Chooks that it's all about, and it is still all about the Chooks, although I'm hardly ever there. The thing is, we've found that if we deal just with the orphanages, just with the kids there, what's happening is, where we have playgroups, mothers are deciding that it's a good thing to put their kid into an orphanage. They'll have a better chance there than at home. And the terrible thing is this fearful question of economic orphans. These kids are not orphans. They've all got parents. And we're trying now to get behind the sort of surface problem. And with Vietnamese people, try and consider why the kids get into the orphanages and how we can prevent them from getting there. And this involves us in community development, creches for young children so that the mothers can go out to work. Meetings where mothers can come and discuss the problems and discuss ways of helping each other. Sort of cooperative movements to help them to buy rice cheaply. Now this is all very dicey, because